Kimberly Norris Guerrero created the role of Jonna in August, Osage County. She is a member of the Cheyenne tribe, the character Jonna is. And Kimberly writes, "I'll never forget the cold December night in 2007 when August, Osage County finally opened on Broadway. We were supposed to debut in November, but shortly after starting previews, a stagehand strike was called and the opening was postponed indefinitely. The delay was painful, not knowing when or if we'd get a chance to tell our story. Everyone sensed Tracy Lett's play was special, relevant, perhaps even important. Each day we weren't in the theater, the pain grew more acute, made all the more excruciating because Dennis Letts, Tracy's father and our patriarch on stage and off, was dying of stage 4 lung cancer. After 19 torturous days, the strike broke and we were allowed back into the theater. The play opened to raves from audiences and reviewers alike, but still, one of our own was dying. A few weeks later, Dennis sat on stage opposite me for the last time, pouring himself out in a way that transcended performance. It wasn't ephemeral. It was eternal." Guerrero continues, "Perhaps in part because of Dennis, August Osage County has a kind of shamanic quality to it, like an oracle draped in a prophetic mantle, willing to show seekers what's really going on beneath the surface of things, ready to speak truths that may not be pleasant to the ears, but are medicine for the soul. For starters, there is the title, August Osage County. Osage County is Osage County because it is home to the Osage tribe. The whole play takes place on indigenous land. This reality creates a subsonic thrum that resounds underneath us. The land remembers, even when we forget. Secondly, there's the playwright himself. In a story as personal as it is political, why did Tracy Letts choose to include a Native American character? In his words, when you grow up in Oklahoma and you have Native American blood, that heritage is embedded in your DNA. His father, Dennis Letts, was a member of the Muscogee Creek tribe. Along with European ancestry, he also passed indigenous DNA on to his sons. So Tracy Letts is of mixed blood. Finally, there is the role I played in all of this, the role of the Cheyenne housekeeper, Jonna. Though some writers critiquing the play viewed Jonna as a small piece of satire, dismissed the role as mere device, or ignored Jonna's presence altogether, she is the spine of the play. Jonna is the unbreakable thread on which the jewels of the story, hilarious and tragic, compassionate and merciless, insightful and inane, all hang with Pulitzer Prize-winning precision. Tracy cut, director Anna Shapiro polished, and a transparency was achieved, allowing the play's native character to remain profoundly visible. Jonna was meant to be seen living in her assigned quarters, the attic, the most remote, uninhabitable part of the entire house, a type of reservation. Jonna was meant to experience long periods of staged silence, perennially present, but rarely heard from. And after three acts, the audience was meant to be left with one final image seared into their conscience. Words of Kimberly Norris Guerrero, who was the actor playing Jonna in the Broadway run of August Osage County, in an essay for Howl Round, February 23, 2005. The Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre will present August Osage County by Tracy Letts this weekend and next, directed by Brandy George, with a cast of veteran actors from the region. The character Jonna was not at the table when three of those performers paid a visit to the WVIA studios, though in a sense, as we'll hear, she seems to have the last word. Jennifer McClinton-Temple, and Lydia Trail, who portray mother and daughter, and Mike Little, who is the husband of the daughter, joined us around the table to talk about the play and their roles. Jennifer McClinton Temple.
The title of the play actually is the title of a poem by Harold Starks. So Tracy Lett's father was an English professor at a college in Oklahoma. I want to say southeastern Oklahoma State, which is in Durant. I lived in Oklahoma for a while, so I know some things about Oklahoma. And this poet was a fellow professor of his father, and he wrote a poem called August Osage County. And that's where he takes the title from. And the poem is about the death of a loved one.
And as it happens, there is a professor of English
right
in the play.
And a poet. And it's not a spoiler to say that the play revolves around the death and the funeral of that character. So obviously there's that connection there. The poem is also really evocative of what it's like in August in Oklahoma. It's bad. It's brutal. The sun is like, it's like an enemy. It bears down on you, and it's tough. It's really tough.
And a lot of the characters in the play react to that at a certain point. I mean, one of my first lines is, "Who looked out at this flat, hot nothing and planted his flag?" So there's this sense that Oklahoma doesn't give much to these characters. They've had to eke out whatever they have. And so there's this sort of hardscrabble nature of all of these characters just battling against nothing, right? The flat, hot nothing of their family as well.
Before we go any farther, introduce us to your characters, and then we'll know out of what space you might be speaking. Jennifer.
So I play Violet Weston, who is the matriarch of the family. So the wife of the character we've been talking about, whose death the play revolves around.
Lydia.
I play her daughter, Barbara Fordham. There are some clashes between Barbara and Violet. They're probably more similar than they would like to believe. But I think it's safe to say that Vi might not be the best mother in the whole world.
Maybe not.
And I play Bill Fordham. I am Barb's husband. And there are some clashes there as well.
Our marriage is on the rocks.
When we hear about poetry in English, then language, words would be important if there's a character who's an English professor and a poet, yes?
Yeah, the play opens. We get to hear from him. We get to hear from the poet character, and he talks in his opening monologue. The character's name is Beverly Weston, and he's played by Mike Lally in the play. And in his monologue, he talks about poetry and death and alcoholism and how all of these things have connected in his life. And I think that you see in that monologue how important language is to Beverly. I'm not sure how important it is to Violet. I think it's probably more important than she would let on. I think that Violet would say it's not important at all because she's just about the day-to-day. But she's fairly poetic in the way that she insults all of her family members.
Well, and even in the midst of her drug-induced haze, Violet has these little snippets of poetry
right.
just swimming through her head. So
right.
it's everywhere. It's everywhere
right.
in their brains, even if they're not aware, which is how poetry works, I think.
So it more is a weapon in Violet's.
Absolutely. Language is definitely a weapon.
Everything's a weapon for
yeah.
Violet.
And how has Bill made his way in life?
Bill is a teacher. He aspires, I think, to a poeticism. He admires the poetry of Beverly, the character we've been talking about. But you can tell from his language that he uses language as a weapon also, but he's not as good at it as Violet. And what's really interesting to me about the way this is written is that he is trying to use language as a weapon. Violet's not. She has she's just naturally weaponized language. Bill, you can sense his hyper-awareness of the words that he's using, and he's not good at it.
Yeah, he's a humanities professor. That's all we know. We don't know exactly what his field is, but we know that he cares a lot about kind of academia and that sort of the sense of impressing.
And status and awards and those kind of things.
Violet doesn't care about impressing. She cares about destroying. And Bill wants to impress.
And you're one, Barbara, of...
Three sisters.
What's the relationship between and among the sisters?
I'm the oldest. Barb is the oldest. And then Ivy is the middle daughter who has never left Oklahoma and is not crazy happy about that. And then the youngest is Karen, who very much has left Oklahoma and has lived much of her life away from her family on purpose and thinks she's beginning a new, brighter life and is really excited to show that off to her family. I'm not sure everybody would agree that it was a brighter life. I'm trying to be very coy here without giving too much away.
Yes,
there are a lot of surprises in the script. You definitely wouldn't want to know everything going in.
As with any well-written play, there are conflicts. And what better way than getting people around a family table, right?
Right. A funeral.
Theoretically. Dinner, yeah, things don't go great when this family is all together, especially on this day. Largely because of Violet, but not entirely. She is definitely the reason why things go badly on that day. But I think that other family members have contributed to kind of where they've wound up. I don't think that any of the relationships in this family are smooth. None of them.
We haven't talked about the other branch of the family, which is Violet's sister, Maddie Fay, her husband, Charlie, and their son, Little Charles, who is also in his 30s. So he's the same age as the Weston girls. And they're a pretty big piece of the play. They're also not healthy.
No.
There's conflict pretty much behind every corner. There's conflict. There's mother-daughter conflict. There's husband and wife conflict. There's sisterly conflict. And just pretty much everywhere you turn, the relationships are fraught.
I think the sisters are particularly fascinating because, you know, they're not tropes. They're really complicated women. But they have that sibling relationship that you see so often of just resenting what they don't have and the others do, or at least what they perceive to be. So, you know, one has a family and the other resents that. One has a job, the other one resents that. One has safety, the other one has that. So there's all kinds of comparison happening between them constantly, and it frays the edges of their relationship so quickly. And some of that comes from Violet, but not all of it.
Would you think of a playwright or a play that we might say, the last time I saw Eugene O'Neill's...
Right, like Long Day's Journey into Night, right? I think that you can make some comparisons there because you have a family with fraught relationships. You have alcohol thrown in. You have illness thrown in. However, Long Day's Journey into Night is never funny. It's never funny. And August Osage County is funny. Often. There are so many funny lines in this play. I mean, even when Violet is at her cruelest, I can hear people laughing. My fellow actors who aren't in the scene, or even sometimes my fellow actors who are in the scene. She has some awesome lines. So does Barb. I mean, these are good. It's funny. It's black comedy because none of it's supposed to be funny, I suppose. But the way that he has fashioned a lot of this dialogue, there's humor in it, which makes those difficult relationships a little less heavy for the audience. And I really appreciate that.
I think the humor is also part of that sort of dry Oklahoma setting. They are all so dry. So the humor so often comes out of this kind of bitter, flat, hot nothingness that they're all related to. And so even while they're suffering or making other people suffer, they're sort of all aware of this nihilism that they're part of too. It's really fascinating. It's that humor, it's all part of some greater pattern.
There's also a self-deprecating strain among them, which that's a humor. A lot of humor comes from there. I think that there's also an understanding that they're gonna shoot barbs at each other, and that's just the way it is. And if you're gonna get oversensitive about that, then you're just gonna spend all your time being oversensitive. And that's not a great use of your time. Get over it. I think Violet says get over it several times.
Jennifer, tell us more about this place, Oklahoma.
So I lived in Oklahoma for 6 years, and I'm from Arkansas, right next door. There's a saying in Oklahoma that the women think it's the South and the men think it's the West. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Oklahoma really is situated in the middle geographically, but it's also in the middle culturally. Having lived there, I see all of these markers that make it very similar to Arkansas or Texas in terms of the southernness. But geographically, it does maybe look more like Nebraska. It really is flatter and other parts of the South are more varied topographically. Oklahoma really is flat on nothing. It really is. And also its history as the Indian Territory. It became a state so late. It was the, I think it's the 47th. I think Arizona is the 48th. I think Oklahoma is the 47th state. It was in the 20th century before it became a state. I think it has a little bit of a confused, it has an identity crisis as a state. And so I see them as very Southern. That's how I see these characters. But I think there is a little bit of a different angle. And Violet has a line where she says, "What do you know about life on these plains?" And so I think there is it's a little twist as to what you might get, certainly in a play set in the Deep South, Mississippi, Louisiana. It's different from that culture.
You mentioned the Indian Territory. What about the character who is actually a right. Native American?
Right. So there is a character named Jana, who is a Cheyenne Indian. And Indian culture is, see, I'm going to call it Indian culture because in Oklahoma, Indians call themselves Indians, which is funny given what the lines from the play. Mm-hmm. But most Indians that I know, and I know a lot, they prefer American Indian is the term that they prefer. But I know that Native American is the more common thing to say. And so she's a member of the Cheyenne tribe. I think she's the only moral character in the play.
Well, and you asked earlier about, you know, whether this family was universal or specific. I mean, I think all good art gets to the universal through the specific, but there are a couple things that make this family strange. I think one thing that you don't get to see depicted that often is is kind of northern xenophobia, but we often associate the South with poverty and with a lack of education. That's usually what we get of that culture in pop culture. You know, that's usually what we get represented. And here we have a Southern, Southwestern, whatever family. It's incredibly erudite, but also came out of extreme poverty. So the last generation grew up painfully poor and is still dealing with the after effects of being incredibly poor in an incredibly poor part of the world. And yet he's also a world famous poet and won the Wallace Stevens Award and is a professor. And there's this erudition and this access to really higher education for all of them out of this hard scrabble land that you don't associate with it. And so there's a real generation clash of that. It almost feels like an immigrant story in some way, like the last generation worked so hard to give opportunities to the next generation that they can't appreciate because they never suffered in the way that the first generation did. And I think that relationship between generations is maybe not universal, but is pretty common. But that setting and that clash sitting in that particular place, I think, is really specific and really fascinating because I don't think we see it a lot.
What about Bill? Are there things that we are led to consider about the masculine or men in this universe that is created in the play?
The men are problematic in the play. To the degree that the play is interrogating anything about masculinity, it's not terribly overt. Like it's not trying to focus on that. I mean, the focus of the play are these two, Barb and Violet, and then the sisters. The men, they're not tropes either, but more so than the women are in the play. One of the things that's kind of amazing about Letts is he invests some humanity in all of these characters, which is really pretty remarkable. Although the men are serving some functions against these women, they're a significant, not the only, but a significant part of the problem that these women have. Particularly Bill, and particularly another character, Steve.
I think you're right that a lot of the relationships between men and women in this play are the men are the problems and the women are the people who are trying to figure out that problem. And I think a lot of the problems that these Western women have is they try to understand men in simplistic terms. I mean, Barb is constantly trying to figure out the problem she has with Bill. And she talks about it in these sort of big abstractions as opposed to dealing with the person in front of her. And I think that happens a lot. And I think even Violet and Bev, as long as they've known each other, she still doesn't get him.
Right. I think that maybe the way that you narrated Barb and Bill, if we could see Violet and Bev before the play began, we might see a similar thing, that Violet doesn't get him. I also think that Violet resents Bev's accolades and his career and his, frankly, his job, because what did she do? she raised children, which didn't have the kind of societal value that his work did.
Right. I mean, it was not right. a good profession no. for her. not a good fit.
She's not a natural mother.
Right. So the men are like part of the problem for the women, but the women themselves are not
sunshine
saints.
And roses.
No,
no,
no. And what I find kind of interesting for at least for Bill is that my read of Bill is that I think he really loved Barbara at some point and perhaps still does, but she is extremely difficult and he's taking an easy way out.
There's another line that Barb has, which I think you're right. You could see that as an echo of Bev and Vi. Barbara says, "We covered this about year three, Bill, that you're the master of space and time and I'm a spastic Pomeranian." Yeah. And I just, that sums up so much of the interactions.
Right.
There's sort of cool, calm, withstanding masculinity versus hysterical woman. And I use hysterical on purpose.
The train wreck aspect of this for me is the kind of the beautiful heartbreak of watching a bunch of characters who are so close. They're so close to being what each other needs and they can't see it and they act against it. They push each other away, but they could do this for each other. They can't get themselves. It's part of this addictive. They can't help but do the things that are pushing it all apart.
Why do we want to come and watch you all be mean to each other?
Right. Well, like we said,
it's so funny.
It's really funny. It's really funny. There are a lot of laughs in this play. There are a lot of scenes that are really emotional too, but all the way through, there are laughs in Act One, Act Two, and Act Three, all the way through. You know, even at the end, without giving anything away, the final scene is a roller coaster in terms of you're going to be laughing and then you're going to be like, wow. So the humor, I think, is a huge draw. But for me, the biggest reason why people should come see this play is because it has 7 complex roles for women. And that's extraordinary. That is extraordinary. I'm a 51-year-old woman who likes to do community theater and I can't sing. So I have very few opportunities to play women who are in my ballpark age-wise. But, I mean, obviously, this is not just my problem. This is the problem of professional actresses. There are not nearly as many great roles for women as they are for men. And we also have a woman directing us, Brandy George. So I just feel like it's extraordinary.
We also have 6 complex roles for men.
And part of the attraction, I think, is it's very funny, it's very difficult, but it's the reality of it, right? This is a stylized family. It's pushed to extremes. That doesn't mean that it doesn't happen in the world this way, but all of the complications in this play are real. And the attraction, the lure of going to see something like this is that it's cathartic, not the right word, but it's useful. It's useful for audiences to see the real laid this bare and to be able to kind of confront that.
There's also just a lot happens. So it's a really juicy plot. And I think there's a lot of plays about, you know, the storm and drang of families and decay and loss and all of this stuff. It's you sit and you watch people feel. And this one, it's like, what just happened? There's so much plot. There's so many reveals and surprises and secrets and hidden all kinds of stuff. So it's juicy. If it weren't so beautifully written, it would be a soap opera.
Does it matter that you all are in a house and you're confined together?
The set is so cool.
Yeah,
we literally have a 3-story house built on that stage. It is fabulous. We have an attic. It's gorgeous. And one of the things that Brandy's been really insistent on in her direction is that we really don't leave the stage that often. Just like when you're home with your family, you don't get to leave that often. We're all right there. And so you see the interactions between these characters and you see them milling around. There's a lot of scenes played in silence when something else is going on over here. There's another scene going on in the dining room, and there's somebody in the study, and there's somebody in the attic, and you can see through to the kitchen, and there's a backyard. I mean, it is amazing how much universe they packed onto this one stage.
It is.
And it's beautiful to look at, and it's just cool. It's really cool.
I read in a review of the production when it was on Broadway that the house is like another character because it brings a certain feel to the production as a whole. Like you were saying, the family is trapped. But also having the set work the way it does, you don't forget that Violet is still in the house, usually being irritated, bitter, whatever. But she's still up there.
She's literally hanging over the scene that's yeah. taking place underneath.
Yeah, you don't forget that Jonna is taking care of the family at all turns. She's in the kitchen. She's upstairs in the attic waiting to be called, you know. And I think it keeps you, you have a better understanding of how this family is working together during this period of time because of the way they're on stage at the same time. And this set is complicated. You won't see a lot of sets like this in the Valley.
It's so detailed. I mean, the prop list is just, there's a dinner for 11. And so there's a dinner service for 11. There's real food. There's green bean casseroles. There's apple pie. There's suitcases yeah. and phones. And I mean, there's just, it's the real fabric of a large sprawling family in a large sprawling house. And somehow we managed to, I didn't, somehow other people managed to put that up on a stage. It's really fascinating.
Three stories. It's really amazing.
Question that we all know every time we pick up the paper. How is addiction handled?
I mean, I'm going to say, and I don't know if they'll agree with me, that the issue of addiction is not seriously examined. That's the way that I would put it. We don't really see much in terms. We see what the pills do to Violet, but we don't get a lot about why she takes them. You know, in a lot of, especially contemporary works that deal with addiction, there will be talk about addiction as a disease. We don't get any of that.
I think, though, that it's not just Vi and Bev have addictions that are obvious. Mm-hmm. The obvious drugs, alcohol. These personalities are addictive personalities. They are trapped in behaviors that they cannot work their way through and out of. So it's not just the two characters who are addicts. All of these characters are trapped in something.
It's almost as if the addictions are treated metaphorically.
It's addiction as self-destruction, right? It's,
right.
It's
and
your
self-medication.
Right.
Self-medication.
Violet, they're all addicted. Yeah, they're all medicating something. Yeah. I think that's an interesting way to think about them all.
You talk about black comedy and humor, and you talked about the punishing light in Oklahoma, the sun that really just is relentless. Is there any light that isn't like that? Any light at the end of a proverbial tunnel?
One of the fundamental conflicts for a lot of the characters is whether they can escape destiny, escape family, and literally escape this three-story house. And so I think the whole, you know, the play has a lot of sadness and a lot of grief and a lot of struggle and a lot of pain. But I think at a certain point, if your life is closing in on you, escaping whatever's closing in on you is kind of a happy ending. And I think we get a sense that some of the characters have a brighter future ahead of them. Is that giving too much away?
I don't think so. I'll try to say this without giving too much away as well. I've thought the whole time we've been doing this production, and in fact, also when I first read the play, which was years ago, I keep going back to Jonna, the Cheyenne character. She's not part of the family, but there's no point in the play where Jonna acts badly. She's the other, you know, she's different from them because of her cultural heritage, but also
and
because
the fact that
of
she
her,
likes her parents.
Because she has. Jonna has a functional family history. Yeah. And that, far more than her ethnicity, makes her different from these characters. And I will say that if you think of Jonna as the moral center of the play, because she's the only place where you can really grab hold of morality, then you might leave with some hope, maybe.
Actors Jennifer McClinton Temple, Lydia Trail, and Mike Little speaking about the Pulitzer Prize-winning play August, Osage County by Tracy Letts. The Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre will present this play this weekend and next, and opening night is tonight. The shows are Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3, and the show continues through Sunday, February 10th, at the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre. For more information, on the web, ltwb.org, or they suggest very strongly that you go to Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre on Facebook. That's August Osage County, the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, on North Main Street. And that's Friday, February 1st, so opening tonight, and running through Sunday, February 10th. Shows Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3. The Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, 537 North Main, in Wilkes-Barre. For more information, on the web, ltwb.org, or find them on Facebook, Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, and theater is spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E.